Good morning. Welcome to Pivot Shift Ahead Mastermind. It's your friend James Shaw. Happy Monday, October the 27th. It's good to see you. I'm so glad you chose to wake up and be here. It's a smart place to be. It's where the smart people are this morning. So you are among the smart people. Give yourself a high five, unless you're driving. I'm very proud of you. Literally no one did that. I just asked you to give you a high five. I'm looking at my screen. Not one person gave them a high five. I was celebrating you this morning. All right. It's great to see you. Thank you so much for being here. I will have a great set of calls this week, which are going to be awesome. Today we're going to talk at the top of the hour, 8 o'clock Eastern, about 20 minutes from right now. We're going to talk about keeping deals together. Did you see the news that came out on Friday? I posted it into the Facebook group, the news that came out on Friday that, fallout is at 15% across the country. Tampa, woohoo, that's where I live. Number one in the country in fallout, 20% of deals are falling out. 18% in Fort Worth. 19% in San Antonio and others. I posted in the Pivot Shift Ahead Facebook group the full article that has your town so you know what your fallout is. If you're listening to the recording, just go into Pivot Shift Ahead Facebook group. You'll find my post. You'll have to scroll. And it's pretty interesting to see what's happened around the country. So we'll talk about that at the top of the hour. But before we do that, I want to talk about something else. Because we always do these kind of two mastermind calls in one. So I want to talk about two things this morning. And that is this. Did you see what I also posted late last night in the Facebook group? Now, this is as of yesterday, so we're down one. But yesterday was 66 days left in the year. 66 days left in the year. So this year is done. Well, if you know from the One Thing book written by Gary Keller and Jay Papasan, the sweet spot for creating a habit is 66 days. Now, it doesn't mean it takes 66 days to build a habit, right? We know they talk about that in the research. It's like anywhere from 12 to 200 plus days, depending on what the habit is. But yes, you're right, Byron. Thank goodness it isn't 6-7. But anyway, it's 66 days to build a habit. We're at 65. Put in the chat, what habit would you like to build? What would be a great habit you'd love to build between now and the end of the year? Now, here's what I was looking at the answers. I love your confident typing. I really do. I love when you get in there and get very excitable, start typing out the habits you want to create. And then if you noticed, I went and asked a lot of questions around some of the habits because many of them were very broad and weren't really habits. They were more like goals that you have. And so I thought we've got to understand the difference between a habit and a goal. Like a goal is an outcome and a habit is a behavior or a process. Now we talk all the time in here about that many people are outcome focused and really should become process focused. We are always measuring our scorecard based on outcomes versus process. And here we talk all the time about let's become process focused. We've used Brad Stahlberg's framework around this, around goal setting. Set a goal, figure out the steps required to reach the goal that are within your control. Forget about the goal, focus on the steps. That's a process focus. So when I asked the question about a habit, I just saw a pattern of either broad and vague or really more goals than habits. A goal is an outcome. I want to take 3 more listings before the end of the year. I want to lose 20 pounds. I'm going to follow my schedule. A habit is a behavior. A behavior that makes it more likely that you'll reach the goal. I'm going to follow my DTD2 every day starting at 9 o'clock. I'm going to get a minimum of 15 points on the tracker before I go do anything else. I'm going to go to bed by 10. I'm going to get up by 7:30 so I can be on the pivot call every day. But we think in these terms of outcomes, listings taken, weight lost, money earned, general, like non-measurable things like be more consistent. And that makes sense because we're outcome, we tend to be outcome focused people. We picture the result and it's not easy to go and take that outcome and turn it into a daily action. So the way that we can look at a habit is asking, is this something I can do today? Like I went in and asked for some of you about clarity. I wanted to get clarity. Be more consistent was the most common type of answer. I want to be more consistent in blank. Well, what does that mean? How would you know? What would be the specific action you'd like to take consistently? I would argue that you actually are consistent either way. You're either consistent in not doing it or consistent in doing it. So, in what way do you want to be more consistent? Like, I want to be on the pivot call every day, or I want to be more consistent in talking to my database. I'm going to ask every person I talk to for a referral. I want to have better follow-up. I am going to do 5 DTD do calls every day immediately after the pivot call. So I think it's important we know the difference, like the destination or the outcome versus the step or the action, and knowing the difference between the two. I pulled some out. These are straight out of your answers on Pivot, but I'm not going to say any names because I never want anyone to look bad. But there was one in here, for example, that says, I want to honor my calendar. I don't think that's a habit, but if we said, review my calendar every day and start my lead gen on time at 9. Stick to my consistent schedule. These are straight out of your answers. Stick to a consistent schedule. What if we said instead time block every morning between 9 to 11 and protect it? Show up for it. Another one, consistency with my schedule. Do you see this? Does anybody see a trend? Consistency with schedule. What's lacking clarity about what it is? Set an alarm for 8:55 a.m. to remind me to start my lead gen at 9. That would be a habit. Calling my database using DTD2 to start somewhere and then being consistent with my follow-up. Do you see the trend on what you want to do? We're all in the neighborhood. This is what I like to say about things sometimes. I go, we're in the neighborhood, but we just haven't found the house yet. Like you're in the right, you're close, but we're just not there. A habit would be make 10 DTD2 calls every weekday morning. That would be a habit. Consistently working my DTD2. That's another one. It's in here. It's in here a lot. Consistently working my DTD2. I had to come up with all these different ways to rethink this. Open my call list at 9 and make at least 10 contacts. I'm working on honoring my time block. There's another one in here. Put my phone in DND during my 2-hour lead gen time. That would be a habit. Putting my health first was another one. Hey, cheers to that. Let's put our health first. How about 10 minutes of cardio every day for the rest of the year? That's a habit. A minimum of 10 minutes of cardio. You can go more, but a minimum of 10 minutes of cardio every day for the rest of the year. Being up on time to be on the pivot shift ahead call live and not watching or listening to the recording. We could reframe it as a habit of set my alarm for 7:15 Eastern, so I'm on the call by 7:30. That's a habit. It's just some stuff to think about. I'm being kind of nitpicky, but when I noticed it, I saw a lot of things that were more goal-oriented and a lot of things that were very broad, like be consistent. That consistency showed up a lot, which we talk about. Again, we already are consistent, so we have to make the decision in what is the consistent habit we'd like to create. A habit is something you can control today, a choice that you've made today, a behavior that you follow. So let's talk a little bit about it. And if you've missed all the setup, you can go back and listen to the recording. It'll be up tomorrow. Julia will be back tomorrow and get it up. But Elaine?
Good morning. So, as you might remember, a couple weeks ago, several weeks ago, 10 weeks ago, I started the 10th 12-week year. So, if people have questions about what you're discussing, goals versus habits versus tasks versus action items, read the 10th 12-week year and start implementing it because there's also a timeline there. So, make them winnable. I've done this for my market center that we've created a 12-week year for contests and things like that for new people. When you're picking on something, make sure that you're actually telling something actionable because there's lead and lag indicators. You want to be able to do something in order to achieve your goal. So just wanted to point out, make it winnable. So, like you said in the example, get up early every morning for the rest of the year. That's 12 weeks. Is that realistic? are you going to win? Probably not, because you're going to miss. So make it winnable, because when I have it at Market Center and people aren't, you know, there, they fall off. It's just like a January intention. So be
intentional. There was one that said they wanted to get up earlier. So again, that's too broad, right, Elaine? It's too broad. We want to narrow it down. So I said, well, what time? And they were like, how does 4:30 sound? And I'm like, if that's what time, if that's the habit you want to build, that sounds great. But if it's not the habit you want to build, that sounds horrible. Like, just make a decision about what's important to you and follow it. By the way, Atomic Habits goes deep on this. James Clear really defines the difference between a habit and a goal. And maybe that's a book we need to study as a community, because I thought we'd talked a lot about habits, and I had a lot of goals or really broad things that you wanted to accomplish. I'm putting the link, if you're on Zoom live with us this morning, link's in the chat right now if you want to go comment directly. I'd love for you to get in there and comment directly on this particular post about what habit you'd like to create going into the new year. Susan Hodgkins, good morning to you.
Good morning. I feel so honored that I got in.
Well, I called on you because you don't raise your hand. I don't know if you've ever raised your hand before, so Dean has to wait, and I'm calling on Susan. Good morning,
Susan. I haven't. I'm fairly new to this group, so thank you.
We're glad you're here.
Thank you. So I come from New Hampshire. I'm in the Bedford and Concord Market Centers, and Bill Weidecker is our OP. You must know him. He's absolutely
great
fantastic.
Great group.
He started a group. I forget what it was called at first, but then he changed it to Morning Mindset. And this was about the time when COVID hit and everybody was on lockdown. And he does your habits. What do you want to do for your 66-day challenge? So every morning he has a block of time where he talks about this. And so we all have different challenges that we're working on. And mine was, at one point, learning command and doing Marty Miller's 66-day challenge. And I did this last year. And my challenge is that I was also in another class. It was a Mel Robbins class. And we had to come up with a challenge for 30 days. So I worked on that every day for 30 days and got through the 66-day challenge with Marty Miller and finally learned command. And that's just one taste of it. It's an amazing group. We really love these challenges that we work on daily.
The challenges are great. And we just wrapped up one a couple of weeks ago inside Pivot and Inspire. The habits are about the challenges are about habit formation, about getting you to do the things you've got to do in order to hit your goals. You're exactly right.
Exactly.
Susan, you should raise your hand whenever you want. Don't you think? Put it in the chat. Should Susan share more? Because Susan is smart. Put it in the chat.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Susan. Be well. Matt Cannon, running the pool. I'm still alive. Thank you to my Indianapolis Colts for the shoe.
Morning, James. You were going to pick him this week.
The week I was going to pick him. I don't ever actually pick him in these things, but I looked at all the other games. I was not confident. My backup was Cincinnati, and I'm glad I didn't go with that. Did we lose anyone on Cincinnati?
Yeah, we lost four.
Four people.
We did lose four.
Wow. Yeah, we lost. All right, so talk about the habits, Matt.
Yeah, so, the way I look at habits versus goals, James, is let's say lead generation is your habit. So you gotta paint the picture. Okay, cool. What is lead generation? What is the picture of lead gen gonna look like for you? Right. So where are you gonna lead gen? Are you gonna lead gen at the office? Are you gonna lead gen on a power hour call? Like, where are you gonna lead gen? Okay, you're gonna do it on a call? Cool. That's your habit. Okay, I wanna be on this call every day, you know, Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 11. Okay, got it. That's habit number one. Second thing is, who are you going to call? Are you going to call your DTD2? Like you said, okay, got it. That's the habit that you're going to follow every single day. Your goal might be the lead gen, and then the habit is what the actions you're actually going
to
take.
That's right. So get it down to the other one. Like, we just had one pop in. Make 4 appointments a week. That's a goal. So what is the habit that you're going to put in place that you have control over that's going to allow you to get your 4 appointments a week? That's what we're getting to this morning. Matt Cannon, thank you. Ashley Bearden, good morning.
Good morning. Just kind of piggybacking off of Matt, and you had already mentioned James Clear. I really just think about James Clear framework on this. Like, what is the tiniest part of that habit that will allow you to succeed? So if it's being more consistent with your DTD2, maybe you break that down to just one DTD2 call. Like, everyone can make one call. It's not so overwhelming. Right. And even further, maybe your habit is to identify that one person before you log off the day before. So you already have it identified. When you step into your lead generation time, you know there's no kind of ifs, ands, or buts about who you're going to call. And really focusing on those lead measures that will get you the lag outcomes.
Smart. That's why I gave the example for the person that said they wanted to, let me pull it up. They said, what did I write down? Put my health first. So I wanted to break it down to what is the easiest thing. And that's why the example I gave was commit to a minimum of 10 minutes of cardio every day. That could just be walking around your neighborhood for 10 minutes. And we make it actually so small to start as we're building a habit. We make it so small to start that it's practically impossible to fail. And then you'll watch the habit expand and grow and develop over time. But we just want to start it in a way that creates instant success. John Acuff talks about it in All It Takes Is a Goal, which 2 weeks from today, everybody, 2 weeks from today is Advance with John Acuff and me. And he talks about setting easy ones first, easy goals first that require simple habits. It's just, let's break it down to its most simplest form. Thank you, Ashley. That was a great cheer. I appreciate you. Valerie, good morning. You're up early, so you go next. Good morning, California.
Oh, yeah, it's early in California. I generally do get up at 4 a.m. so I could be on this call. Yeah. I have this little checklist that I work with that simply because one little thing doesn't make that much difference in my world. But getting back to a series of things, which gets me on the right track. So in the morning, it's like I get up, I get my protein drink in, I get on this call, I read 10 pages, I go through my own personal miracle morning, because I found if I meditate, it gets my edge off. And if I'm not edgy, I won't make my calls. So I don't meditate in the morning. I just go for it. And then getting my health back on track, because it kind of got a little wandering this year. I usually have health goals like I'm going to do these powerlifting contests. You know, I'm going to do these long bike rides. And I didn't have this year. And I got off and I was like, OK, I don't want to do as hard 75, but could I do a cardio workout and a lifting workout every day? Yes, I could do that. And the cardio workout could be as simple as walking one of the dogs. Or riding my bike. It doesn't matter. But both of those things need to happen every other day, basically, for me to get back on my health. And when I get strong and healthy again, I sell more houses. And even though I'm having a very good year, and I'm very grateful for that, and I blame this community for my good year. So thank y'all. It could be better, and I can be better, and I'm going to be better. By getting back on track, is once I start doing these things, the next thing that I need to do is, oh, get on the phone calls. Oh, return, you know, the emails. Oh, check to see who's coming to my event in 3 weeks. So there you go.
I despise the concept of a 75 hard. I think it's among the dumbest things ever created in the history of Earth. It's stupid.
Well, it's discipline is what it is. So it's like the things I take off of a gallon of water is too much for a 5'4" woman. Mm-hmm. So I just don't do that. I keep it at around 100. You know, being in real estate and having to go to many events, it's like I like to occasionally have a glass of wine. So
yeah, but it's not at all about habit formation. It's about intensity over consistency. It's about push to your limits, and then as soon as it's done, then you're over and you go back, and it'll work in that window, but it doesn't create long-term stuff. It actually causes you to dislike the activities that you're attempting to add into your world. It's just, I am not a fan. I do not endorse it ever. We'll never do a version of it. It's just not at all what I'm into. Building the right things for us and not following some made-up thing that's not based in anything that gets people to talk a lot and and then despise what they're actually trying to do, and then go back to normal when it's done. That's intensity over consistency. I don't know. It's classic bro method, and I'm not into it. So go figure out. Now, there could be elements of it that you want to put into place. That would be fine. I'm cool with that. But to just go reading 10 pages a day, that's a great idea. That's a great idea if you want to do that. Not drinking alcohol. I haven't had a drop of alcohol since April 4th. Don't miss it. It's a great idea if that's something you want to do. Yeah. I'm not going to drink a gallon of water. I mean, just you go figure out these little elements. But I think it's stupid. Or maybe it's slow. Or is it useless? I don't know. There's another word for it. Good morning. What's up? It is 7:59. It's good to see you. It's your friend James Shaw. Happy Monday. Welcome to a new week. Last week in October, Halloween is on Friday. Don't forget, it is our annual costume contest. If you're on Zoom with us during the call on Friday, our annual costume contest, there's no prizes. It's just our annual contest where you all are winners. And we'll have fun and get dressed up. I've got my costume ready to go for Friday. So I trust all of you have yours. We're going to have a lot of fun. But leading up to Friday, we got to have a great week of calls, too. We started things off this morning talking about habits and goals and the difference between the two because we have 65 days left in the year. And so yesterday, when we had 66, because that's how the calendar works, I went into Pivot Shift Ahead and asked, with 66 days left, what's a habit you'd like to create before the end of the year? Because, you know, the one thing book, Jay and Gary tell us that the sweet spot for creating a habit is 66 days. It's not that all habits take 66 days. There's 12 to 200 plus days, but they found 66 to be the sweet spot. And so with 66, 65 days, 6, 7 days left in the year, I asked you what habit you would like to build. What was interesting was a lot of you really gave us either it was very broad and vague or it was really more of a goal. So we talked about the difference between habits and goals on the first part of the call. If you missed it, you can go back and listen to the podcast version. Now I want to move on to another topic, which is about growing your business and making it better. I posted in the Facebook group, and I'll share the link in the chat here in just a second, about the data that's just come out about fallout of your transactions. Link's in the chat right now. It's 15% nationwide. Some areas it's more. Here in Tampa, it's 20%. It's where I live. 19% of deals are falling out in San Antonio, 18% in DFW. I mean, it's just really, really interesting. And so I want to spend some time today talking about keeping the deal together, because when a deal falls out, you got a disappointed seller, an annoyed buyer, and you have agents who did work and didn't get paid. You have a loan officer who probably did some work and didn't get paid. You've got people who paid money for stuff that now they're not going to use, like they did an inspection and paid for, and now they're not buying the house or whatever. Seller paid for staging, now they got to start over again. Like, it just leads to frustration when a deal falls apart. And we can expect deals to fall apart, but I'd like it to be in the more the 5 to 6% range than the 15 to 20% range. So we're going to get your ideas on keeping the deal together. I want to congratulate Cindy Keefe. She's in Montreal. Listen, Cindy did the blessing baskets that Ellie taught us to do and was recognized by the Canadian Parliament for giving back to her community. She received an award for running blessing baskets. And so I want to just shout out Cindy this morning that running blessing baskets, getting recognized by the Parliament in Canada for doing so is such a cool thing. So Cindy, congratulations to you. And Ellie, thank you so much for teaching us about it. And those of you who are running blessing baskets, you can get the full playbook at blessingbaskets.jamesdshaw.com. One more thing I want to mention before we get started is this is that goal time of year that we start thinking about our goals and the habits that we need and all that kind of stuff. Hey, would you put in your day timer Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern? Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern. Would you put this in your day timer? I would love for you to come hang out with me. We're doing a whole thing. I'm calling it What Worked and What's Next. What worked and what's next? And it's a series of questions. I'm just laying out questions for you to think about, to reflect on 2025 and prepare for 2026. 2 o'clock Eastern on Wednesday. I'll put the link in the chat, but it's easy. It's jamesdshaw.com/Wednesday webinar. jamesdshaw.com/Wednesday webinar. We're gonna go in and I'm gonna ask you some questions. It's just a series of questions for you to think about. Inspire members, you'll have a corresponding worksheet you can do later where you just go through and reflect on 2025 and then consider what you'd like to do in 2026. Now, I know that I'd like for you to keep your transactions together in 2025 and 2026. And like I said at the top of the call, transaction fallout is going up. 15% nationwide, 20% in other parts of the country. Now, in Shift page 269, Shift book page 269, Gary reminds us that this can happen. He says, we got to play defense. He said that typically fallouts can increase from under 5% in a seller's market to well over 25% in a shifted market, a quarter of all deals. He says, so anticipate problems proactively and take steps that will prevent anything from sabotaging the deal. He says, if finding the motivated and getting to the table and creating urgency represent playing offense in the game of real estate sales, then bulletproofing the transaction is about playing defense. You take charge. Occasionally, you may even need to get a little bit pushy in protecting your client's welfare and your transaction. And if you play it right, there won't be many surprises. You'll catch things early, even before problems occur, and certainly before the closing is at risk. The procedures you put in place will serve you in every market. They are always the right things to do, but in a downshifted market, they can make a big, an even bigger difference, the difference of whether or not you get paid for your work. So I'm curious about, with fallout being up, what are you putting in place to make sure that you're keeping majority of the deals together? Some are going to fall out for very valid reasons, but they shouldn't be up at 20, 25%. Orly, let's start with you. Good morning.
Good morning. So we're going to hear a lot of things this morning about bulletproofing your transaction with pre-inspections and things like that. But I just want to point out that the first thing that we have to do is build trust with your buyers and your sellers. Because if you don't build trust, you can't keep the deal together because they won't follow your lead. If you meet a client at an open house and they fall in love with the house and you write up the offer and then things go wonky, there's no relationship there. Why would they listen to you? Who are you? You're just the person that wrote up the offer. But if you take the time to build the relationship and build the trust up front, then they will take your guidance and your resources and listen to the hard. Listen to the hard when they have to give a $20,000 credit because they know it's the difference between moving and not moving. So I'll let everybody else give you the bulletproof ideas, but build the trust up front first.
Orla, that's great advice. Thank you. Tulio, you're next. Good morning.
Thank you, James. And yes, exactly what Orly said. We always do a consult with every client before we start serving them, buyer or seller. I'm going to focus on the buy side. And I've said this before, but it's been a while, James. I have a moment in the buyer consult that's called the no flake talk. And I define exactly what that is. And I go into explaining that it's not appropriate to flake out on the other side, particularly the next day or at the time of the inspection, that the inspector is going to find a multitude of things, and that's okay. We'll work through it. But I make sure that they understand that flaking is not acceptable. And I actually put it in my executive summary. At the end of my executive summary, it says, no flake discussion. Buyer received the talk regarding it's not appropriate to flake out on a seller, and the buyer agreed. And I put that in there and I show it to the buyer before we submit the offer. So they know that that's in there. Then when we go over the contract before we submit, we go over it again. So they know that's just not appropriate.
It's two people now have told you you have to set the expectation, right? You've got to create a trust relationship, which is about setting expectations. You can't meet an expectation that hasn't been set. So you have to be able to have conversations about what they want and allow them to see you as a valuable resource. And then Tulio's laying it out. We're not going to flake out over this. And here's what that means. Tulio, thank you. These are two good ones off the top. Tammy, we rarely hear from you, so I'm going to let you go next. We're just bouncing around in the thing this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much. My recommendation is to actually talk to the other agent. I am shocked and awed that agents still just email or just text.
So dumb.
I almost lost a deal last week because the agent just sent an email, said my buyer's backing out. I'll send over the cancellation. So I immediately picked up the phone and called her and go, what's the deal? Well, all they needed was a little bit of extra money for closing costs. So I talked to my seller, we negotiated it. And guess what? The deal's back on. I'm just amazed that people don't want to talk to each other. They just want to email or text. So communication and actually talk and find out what is going on and save the deal.
Something simple. This deal almost fell out over something really simple. Understanding the the skill set of the agent on the other side, if there is one, is really important. And I would recommend in today's market that you schedule time to chat with that other agent very early, whether on phone or in person over a cup of coffee. But build a relationship with them, talk with them early, and just get a little bit of an understanding as to where they are skill-wise so you know where you might have to step in. Jessica Wright, good morning.
Hey, good morning, James. Thank you. I think in this market, we have to double down on communication and we have to go slow. We have to take our time on every consult, buyer and seller. We have to fully prepare the seller in walkthroughs before listings, like, you know, pre-inspect, show them exactly what buyers are going to be asking money for, really get them to the full capacity of their condition versus price. And with buyer, we have to do the same thing. We have to prepare them for inspections, what's coming back, even on new construction. Like Tulio said, that was great. You have to teach them that we're not going to flake, but slow down and take your time on these consults and hit every bullet point. And something else that I've noticed recently that this year that's kept my sellers in line is every week, it's not just a phone call follow-up, it's full-blown comps every Monday morning. This is what went under contract. This is your competition. This is what came on the market. This is where they're priced. And this keeps them fully informed and it makes them relax. They know I'm working for them in the background and they're less trigger happy.
That's smart. Really smart. Jessica, thank you. Robin McCoy, good morning.
Good morning, James. Good to see you last week. Thank you.
You too.
Kind of what everybody's saying is all about communication and talking to the other agents, and as well on the seller side, calling those lenders and making sure that the buyer is qualified. I had one this summer that one little shift in the interest rate and it threw them out of affordability. So you want to make sure that for your sellers, that you're the buyer on the contract can go through with the contract, as well as your buyers, making sure they're shopping in their league and not trying to overdo.
That's really good. Thank you, Robin McCoy. Jenny Wallach, good morning.
Hey, good morning. I am definitely experiencing this even on our team, and it stinks, to be honest. And so the reminder here is, and something I have been observing talking to lots of agents like you do, James, is I am also thinking that us agents need to do our part in remembering that we don't need to always be the hero. It's our job to be helpful. And I think that on top of the stress of our buyers and sellers having the chaos of possible deals busting, internally, us as agents need to continue to take care of ourselves and have the energy needed and the education to best guide our clients. I echo everything that's been said. It's all about the conversation. So going back to remembering and discussing their motivations and their reasons, the reality of a busted deal sucks. The seller, we got to put it back on. Now we get to explain why, even if it was at no fault of theirs, it's still a big old mess that no one really wants to work through. So, you know, being helpful along the way and always at each step, explaining the next steps, but not just saying like, oh, yay, this is so fun. The next step is this, but rather here are the things that could happen in the next steps during our inspection period. Things can come up and even sharing the not so great stories that could happen during inspection periods or low appraisals we're getting again. So here are the next steps. We had an appraisal come in the morning of the closing day. Okay. I mean, really, of course it was 10 grand low and now we get to figure all that out and it actually didn't work out. And so it sucks.
But how frustrating would that be?
So it's bad. Very frustrating. And the client, you know, felt like, well, we didn't realize that was a tight timeline. So I realized, well, that's the deal. We have to spread out more time for the contracts. We can't just do 30 days. It's easy breezy. There's so much that has to happen in between in that period of time. So if we have more time, then we allow for all the things to be done and it to be less stressful as well.
Good stuff. Thank you, Jenny. Appreciate it. Renee Forsyth, good morning.
Good morning from Colorado. The cool thing is that everyone here is giving things to give us another checklist. and ways to check things off, and I'm a big list person. But I think if we don't get the checklist, if we don't look back, and I think the first step is to look back so that you can know where you're going. So be able to look back at yourself. What did you do? What did they do? Was it preventable? All of those sort of things. And then sort of bulletproofing your mindset, having the what if or an if then plan, you know, Justin so described this so well. Bulletproofing is an if then plan for every single transaction, for every single day, for everything that you do. And interestingly enough, I learned that when you're learning to walk again or you're learning to stand up, you have to look backwards to put your butt where it needs to go. Just so you know. So without looking backwards, we don't know where to go and how to set that checklist and how to, which steps to follow. And there's so much to learn. DISC, bulletproofing, like going through the MREA and like there's so many things to do. But again, looking back at your transactions that have fallen, because unfortunately we've all got them, and looking back at the ones that were successful, what worked and what didn't, so that you can. And that's why you get on this call.
Sounds a lot like what we're going to do on Wednesday, too. That's the name, Renee, of the call on Wednesday, is what worked and what's next is actually what I called it. And let's figure out where are we winning, where are we losing, and then what do we need to do to improve. All right, Renee, thank you. Glad you're here. Kim Lundberg, you get the last word this morning. Good morning to you.
Yeah, so I also think it's extremely important who you hire for your property inspector and those people, because how they go about doing that, bedside manner and all that matters, but also their knowledge. I'm in the middle of one right now, $160,000 property with a $12,000 problem. But because of the knowledge of this inspector, he knew of a $6,000 grant that this buyer could get for nothing. So then when we went and asked the seller for only half the problem, they said, sure, because they see it's being split. My gal didn't have $6,000, but I saved the deal. So who you hire matters.
Really smart. Make sure you have the right partners. Kim, great chair. Everybody, great chairs. Let's keep those deals together. Let's find a way to keep. There's going to be some fallout, like the example Jenny gave. There's sometimes it's just going to happen. But I think a lot of the stuff that falls out probably shouldn't. And if we do a little bit of work on the front end, set some expectations, and do the things we need to do, we can probably keep it together. All right, it's a Monday. Here's the question. What habit are you going to start today? What's the action you're going to take now that this call's over? What's the next right thing for you to do? Go do it. And then we'll see you tomorrow. You got your inspiration. Go put in the perspiration. Bye.